Are you confident at this point that over the past, 30, 40 years, that both on the competition scene and in the private training scene, that the changes that have been made, the introduction of force on force, the introduction of combatives, changes in techniques, those sorts of things, are you confident that those changes are well-founded or based in data, like you said you use to make your own personal decisions, or are you worried?
I think a lot of them are. I think certainly as we look at some of the stuff from the competition side, for example, when I started, there were some PBC matches where you couldn't use speed loaders because those were seen as gamesman gimmicks. And time went on, and before the revolver, got bypassed entirely by the sea change to the auto, the speed loader was virtually standard issue for any department that, still had revolvers on the street. I wrote a book in 1988, The Semi-Automatic Pistol in Police Service, when it was still, oh my God, we can't give up our trusted friend, the revolver, these new bangle jam-o-matics, blah, blah, blah. If you can't do it with six, you can't do it at all. Insert additional cliches if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff I have seen, though, the guys being taught your pistol has gone a slide lock, so you point it to the sky to reload, because that will let your eye guide the magazine into the butt a tenth of a second faster. Two huge problems with that. One, just from the training and safety side. I have seen one of the guys, so many guys, particularly with the Smith M&Ps, you slam the magazine and the slide closes.
Mm.
You have spent enough time on the range to see guys who leave their finger in the trigger guard doing a sustained fire speed reload.
Yeah.
All you got to do is combine those two things. As the slide slams forward, the gun pulls slightly forward, it pulls the trigger into the finger, a shot goes skyward and it leaves the range. Mm-hmm. Maybe it just lands in a local subdivision and shuts down the police range. Maybe, like 10 years ago in Ohio, it lands a mile away and strikes in the head and kills a 15-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
That particular one was not a semi-auto reload, but you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
The other huge tactical problem with that is when you bring the pistol to that position, you are showing your opponent, my pistol is empty. What I do on the range, I tell folks, okay, I raise my hand in a stop gesture. I say, this is the international hand signal for what? And everybody says, stop. I say, okay, and I take the empty pistol and slide lock, turn it sideways toward them with the muscle up and say, and this is the international signal for what? My gun's empty. You've got 2 seconds to murder me. Here's your free shot. What the fuck are we doing that for? One-tenth of a second less, you simply keep the muzzle on target, flex the arm in, turn the butt 45 degrees, slap the mag in, close the slide, and go. By the time the other guy figures out that you were empty, it's past tense because you reloaded again. So I see little things like that that irritate me. People who spend a little too much time on the electronic timer and not enough on the human dynamics side of it, looking at essentially the opponent's side view of what you're doing.
Gotcha.
But by and large, we are leaps and bounds beyond where we were 40 years ago.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of names so far, and I'm gonna stick to that for a moment. Can tell me some of the folks who have had the greatest influence on you as you were coming up, both as a student and as a trainer, and also if you know, maybe going back another generation, some of the folks who were the biggest influences on them?
Well, I'd say are you looking at people I read growing up or people I knew and trained with personally?
Both.
Well, in reading, certainly Cooper. I don't think there's any question. Without Cooper, it would have been a long, long time before anybody figured out, hey, you know what, we can get a whole lot better hit potential. Two hands and aiming when we can doing this shoot from below line of sight shit one-handed. And a lot of people just scoop it today. A lot of people teach us four rules of safety without giving attribution.
Mm.
But I think Cooper made tremendous strides. One of Cooper's contemporaries, Ray Chapman, I probably learned more from him than anybody else. He was one of the guys that Jeff dedicated Cooper on handguns to, the first world champion of the combat pistol. And Ray applied he was an engineer in his day job for most of his career, and he applied an engineer's approach to it. And that's something I think that we are still doing. And I think a whole lot of people don't realize, you know, this guy was doing it before we were, and he kind of set the tone for it. Certainly John Farnham, in the 70s, John was the first of us to become what he calls an itinerant instructor. And for all the people that couldn't, you know, save up the money for the trip to Gunsight, you know, the pilgrimage to Mecca, here's a set of, we'll wait for, you know, 24 of you to get the money together to come to us. How about one of us pays the money and comes to you? And we can get, you know, the couple of dozen of you trained right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been huge in the training industry. And it's simply, it's gotten the knowledge flowing into the capillaries as well as the main arteries. And we really, I think, owe that to Farnham. He was the first of the traveling instructors. And in my day, well, in the late 1970s, Frank McGee, he was the guy who in 1970, when he took over the firearms training unit at NYPD, turned it from firearms training unit to firearms and tactics unit. He went from the one-handed bullshit to two-handed isosceles for virtually everything. Don't point, shoot, aim the goddamn gun. Look, use cover. He would force the guys to get them out of static positions. If you went out to the ranch on City Island, you'd be shooting from behind telephone poles, mailboxes, fire hydrants, all of that. And he literally took that department from like a 50-50 win-loss rate to an about 11-1 win-loss rate.
Hmm.
Here's the guy that told me, don't focus on the gun, you focus on the officer, what they're doing with it. You may know that we need better ammunition and better guns than we have, but know what battles you can win and what hills you can climb. He said, look, I get it when you talk to me about 45 automatics. He said, if I recommended this department go to 45 automatics for what was then 28,000 police officers, there's now 36,000. He said, I'd be walking a foot patrol in Coney Island tomorrow, and some guy from the Bullseye days would be in here taking over firearms training. So pick the battles you can win, and, you know, be a realist about it. And I kind of learned that the hard way at my own department, but it was absolutely true. I think Jeff Chudwin, the ITOA guy, head of Illinois Tactical Officers Association, competitive shooter, many times national champion of patrol rifle, chief of police for many years in Olympia Fields, Illinois, and a former prosecutor, his masterful knowledge of liability case law is a role model, I think, for all of us. And the man is a splendid teacher as well. God, as soon as I hang up, I'll think of more. Bill Jordan, I got to know him in my early 70s.
What was that name?
In the early 70s, I'm sorry. Bill Jordan, phenomenal shooter, unbelievable ability to point shoot and stuff. He would shoot aspirin tablets from the hip to 10 feet.
Wow.
It was not a transmissible skill, but it was a joy to watch. And while the techniques were not anything I wound up using, the mindset was the absolute determination that before it happens, you're ready to do what you got to do. This was a guy who, I want to say, he was in the Pacific Theater, I want to say Tarawa. Now, if you ever met Bill Jordan, the guy was 6 feet, 7.5 inches tall. His hands were so big he had to have his gloves custom made. They sent him in the pillboxes to kill enemy soldiers. And when you think about it, there's only one reason you pick a guy that big to go into a structure made for people a foot and a half shorter than him.
Right.
He's the most efficient killer you have at your disposal. And there were things I learned from him, certainly. Going around the country, sitting down with people like Dick Newell when he was head of training for LAPD, getting to meet Larry Mudgett and John Helms and guys like that at LAPD. Basically, all of them had a piece of the puzzle. All of them were inspirational. Without exception, they used their sights. They used two handholds. They made it work, and they showed other cops how to do it. I don't think Bill Drewden was ever, God rest his soul, I don't think he was, don't put this in the book, but I don't think he was ever able to teach anybody else to hit aspirin tablets from a hip at 10 feet. Okay? Mm. Helms and Mudgett taught thousands of LAPD officers to hit center with two hands hold, watching their front center.
Gotcha.
And, essentially, certain things every generation seems to have to rediscover. So those were some of the guys. John Hearn, hell, with there was no early analog to John Hearn. Nobody was doing what he was doing with combining physiopsychological aspects of learning with combatives, with shooting, with what the professional has to do with a gun in the hand. And John, I think, is one of our brightest shining lights of the current generation. So was Todd Lewis Green, who we lost altogether too early.
Yeah.
Tom Gibbons, of course, again, the pragmatic, integrated approach, the let's see what works. It's not about theory, people. This is applied science. This is life or death where the rubber meets the road.
You kind of touched on my next question when mentioning John Hearn, but I was curious who you think the torch should be passed to with respect to civilian, personal defense, and also in the law enforcement context?
Well, John, I think, is one of the rising stars, and I don't think he hasn't reached nearly the exposure he should have. I wish to hell he'd write a book.
I think he's working on it, theoretically.
Rory Miller certainly is another. Oh, my mind has just gone blank. I'm picturing him like he's standing here. Greg Morrison. His historical work on this, I'm not sure it's been published in its entirety. But just hearing him talk about what he did find, comparing early training methods with later, is absolutely fascinating. He was for many years one of Jeff Cooper's acolytes. Today is a criminal justice professor in, I want to say, Indiana. Rich Grassi, I think, is a very solid voice of reason, and I honestly don't think has gotten as much exposure as he deserves in Kansas. Chuck Haggard is another one who has applied that sort of thing. Paul Sharp. So the new generation, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, goddamn youngsters, they don't know what asshole cops do. But we have a bright, strong regiment of fine young instructors coming up behind us.
Well, that's encouraging. That is encouraging because the training community has had a rough couple years, I'd say. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, God. We lost Walt Rausch. We lost Todd. We lost Pat Rogers.
Yeah.